This is Engineer Eric from the Jimmy Doan Show. You're listening to our September 19th, 2011 Jimmy Doan Show.
That mojo.
Mojo.
Woo.
We got
hey,
mojo.
What happened to the intro? I thought we had a new intro.
We got lots of intros. I just haven't been rolling because they're trying to bang these shows out and get them done. I'm slammed with work right now, so it just takes longer to do it.
So today we got Counselor Curtis.
Hello.
And the Supreme Court's not in session until the first Monday in October, so we don't...
I'm useless.
Yeah, you're useless, right. I don't think they're going to probably issue any rulings until January, February. And Engineer Eric.
Hey.
Okay, good. And Jimmy Doe.
Right.
Okay, good.
We're about to anticlimactic intro. Are you going to put a new intro in there, or what are you doing here? No.
Typically, no. I mean, I'm just trying to...
You're starting
so late. I just got to get back and try to mix this up. I got to slam tomorrow, man.
Right. No, I'm just saying, are you going to put one in after, or...
No, and he doesn't... No, it's fine. You know, we'll do it next time. We'll do a show next time. Come on, let's move along. Okay. The first item on the list, of course, which has happened just last week and today, Obama comes out to the Rose Garden. Last week, he came out with the jobs program, right?
The American Jobs.
That was a $450 billion jobs program. And then today he comes out with the spending program, I guess it is, how we're going to fix the budget. And there was a...
$3 trillion in cuts.
$3 trillion in cuts. About half of it is
over
in...
50 years?
Yeah, that's about it, right. Well, of course, all the cuts, you know, it's funny. The jobs program, of course, can't possibly take effect for a while because... Even the stuff that's, quote, shovel-ready, you've still got to get permits and, you know, bridge roads and stuff like that. I just don't go out there and start paving them tomorrow morning. And, of course, you got to hire the people. I mean, you know, where are they coming from? I don't know. I mean, what, some accountant? It was at Wall Street that got fired or, you know, some mid-level guy at IBM that got fired. He's going to go out there and pour tar.
It's all those out-of-work people. They're just sitting around waiting for the phone call.
That's right. So that ain't going to happen. But the other thing is that conceivably could ramp up a couple of jobs between now and the election. But I can guarantee you, prediction from Jimmy, there will be an increase in the unemployment rate between now and the election. It's now currently 9.1. In spite of the jobs program, even the recognized unemployment rate will approach 10%.
Well, it's just going to save a lot of jobs. It would have been even
Well, that's
worse.
The other thing. Yeah, you have to understand that so many of these jobs are like teachers. They're government jobs. Teachers.
Right.
And, you know, crossing guards and I don't know who else. I mean, it's just... you know, jobs that are
very highly important.
Highly important, right? Okay, good. So the
there's a real reason why the jobs plan has to fail.
Is
well, every business has a regular business cycle, and there's people out there with money that are always looking for businesses to invest in.
Right.
I mean, that's all they do is look. I mean, that's what investors do.
Right.
And so, if there was an analyst who could identify for the government a good company,
right,
then they could identify that same company for the private sector.
And they did, though.
Well, exactly.
Solzhenitsyn. Or
Solyndra.
Solyndra. Yeah, they identified Solyndra and as a viable company, you know, a year ago, gave them more than the jobs program, gave them $500 million. I'm sorry, gave them not more than the job, gave them $500 million. And then they, you know, like last week, they tanked. I mean, you know, declared bankruptcy. Goodbye. You know,
yeah. Right.
All the money's... Hanger Dogs actually predicted that a long time ago, like on our last show, like a couple of years ago.
Well, look, this is the inevitable result of having a political decision be part of the financial process.
Right.
They got
nothing to lose. Nobody in the government got fired over this.
Well, there's going to be some heads rolling on
you
this.
You think?
Oh, yeah. This is going to blow up. This is going to be
high.
It doesn't look half a billion dollars.
You know, pocket change. Eh. You find that in the cushions, you know, in the sofa.
I don't know. I think now, look, all the Democrats are coming out right now and saying, look, it's green jobs. But my point is, look, anytime you have if the government gets involved in any kind of a jobs program,
right,
what you're talking about is decisions that are being made that apparently the private sector is unwilling to make.
Right.
Investments into companies.
Right. Well, they do that all the time.
They're
of course,
not going to touch.
When they issue as they do here locally, they'll like help a business. You know, they'll have an incubator. They'll give them some kind of tax break or something like that. And of course, the question is, I mean, if it's all that good a deal, what do you need the government for? I mean,
well,
you know,
exactly.
Any investor, and of course, a lot of times what they'll say is, well, this particular business, like Hoover Dam or something, is too big.
Uh-huh.
Well, it's not. I got a newsflash for you. You know, it's amazing when you think about the size of the stuff of some of the people that could round up the money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it was a really good pay, in other words, if you could charge, for instance, for Hoover Dam, which you do, electricity, and charge, go across it and charge the tourists and everything else. I mean, if it costs today, you know, $2 billion or $3 billion, I mean, Bill Gates could write a check for that.
But if it's a good business model, the investors will take it.
Yeah, the investors will always be there. And you see this, and you see where you see this, of course, so often is where you recognize this, and this is the beauty of the capitalist system and the investment system, is when you have an IPO, an initial public offering, and very often they will raise $1 billion, $2 billion, $3 billion in their IPO from, you know, 10,000 investors. But, I mean, the money, it's still $3 billion. I mean, so the money's there, and for the good business model.
Right. Oh, and that's the other thing. As we know, the jobs program, the only place they can take the money from are other successful businesses.
Other people that have jobs.
Right. That's what I mean.
I mean, the fact is, you know, it's what it means is if you take $40,000 to hire, you know, Mr. You know, tar pour person over here. That means that the business that donated that 40 donated, I like that. It was stolen the 40,000. That means that business cannot hire a $40,000 person.
Right. That's what I mean. They have to be more successful than the business they taxed.
Right. And they never are. Why? Because, and I'm just reading this book now. I'm about halfway through it. Another Ludwig von Mises book called Bureaucracy. And the reason is that the government bureaucracies don't have a P&L statement. They don't have a profit and loss. You can't do a profit and loss on the police. I mean, you know.
Well, and that's,
except actually here they can because they get you on the side of the road.
You could do a profit and loss on a government business, though, on Solyndra. There's a profit and loss.
Well, of course, that wasn't a government business, but
but it's the same thing from the standpoint of.
They do it here. In fact, our government does own the electric company.
Right, exactly.
So they can do a P&L. Now, of course, they suck off $30 or $40 million a year. So that the taxpayers supposedly don't have to pay it. But of course, our rates could be lower by that much.
And they have a monopoly. Which
is nice, right? Yeah, you're right. They do have a monopoly on that. They never have, of course, a 100% monopoly because if they tried to charge
$1 million a watt,
I mean, nobody would buy it. They wouldn't be able to afford it. But you can bet right away that the sale of home light generators would shoot through the ceiling. You know, those Guardian diesel generators would be in every yard.
Right. Well, so my point is,
Solyndra would be in business.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Hey,
they're a solar panel manufacturer.
Right. Well, they were.
Right.
That's right.
Right.
And or else you'd have one of those big tall fans in your backyard. You know, blowing.
Yeah.
Generating the juice.
I love this little quote in here. Goes, this is Obama 1 year ago. It's here that companies like Solyndra are leading the way towards a brighter, more prosperous future.
Let me tell you about the Solyndra thing. Of course, they said what was interesting were there were several reports, even one by some government agency, that said this is not a good deal. In fact, they approached Bush, and Bush's people investigated. No, I don't think so.
Right.
The point is that the big argument here is that China subsidizes the bejesus out of their solar energy people in order to get the price down. Well, fine. If they want to soak their taxpayers, that's fine. I mean, that's what a subsidy is. You soak the taxpayers. And if they want to give us the solar panels for free, you know, and their taxpayers are picking up, fine, I'm in. That just is more money that I get to spend on booze or something.
Yeah, the argument is that China is going to be the one that what they do is, since they heavily capitalize through government funding all of these new green jobs, that they're going to be the ones then paving the future.
Right.
But what that doesn't take into account is, of course, all of the failed Solyndras that they might invest in and all of the political decisions that they might make in making all of these companies. Who knows what decisions they're going to make? But it's certainly not going to be the financial decision because it's being made by the politics.
Right. You're talking about China or here?
In China.
In China, too. You're, well, that's the other thing. We don't know how many businesses they've invested in China that have failed.
Right.
And I don't care. And the other thing is, the other argument, though, is what they call the first investor thing. That is, if they get a foothold, then they can raise the price. No, I'm sorry. It doesn't work that way. You think it does? but they are still subject to other market considerations. And you can bet that even if they were the only supplier of solar panels and they were giving them to us for, you know, a penny a watt, and they got and put everybody in the entire world out of business, and they said, good deal, now we have a monopoly, and they tried to raise the price to the market price, you can bet there would be competitors in there tomorrow.
Right, and that was Celinda's problem.
Right.
They were trying to sell it for $6 a watt, or for $3 a watt. They were manufacturing at $6 a watt, and their business model was to sell at $3 a watt.
Yeah, that's a buy high and sell low. No, I'm sorry, that doesn't work. I've always said, you know, when they were talking about, when they always have this thing called dumping, for instance. They were dumping cars, for instance, over here because the Japanese taxpayers were subsidizing.
Right.
Fine. You know, I'm an owner. It's more money that I actually...
And the argument against dumping, against allowing dumping, is that they're going to put our companies over here out of business.
Well, of course, they already put out all of the VCR, CDR, Blu-ray, everybody else manufacturers, and that's fine. Like, who cares?
Well, but what the argument is, and I'm just repeating the argument, I'm not saying it's valid, I'm saying that what they're saying is if you dump onto a market, you undercut all the normal market people, and to the point of where they go out of business, and then, like you said, you can raise your prices.
As soon as you try and raise your price,
those people
get back in. And what they say, well, but it's capital intensive. It's like, for instance, they dump all the cars out over here, and GM and Chrysler and Ford all went out of business.
Mm-hmm.
Then they could raise the price because it would cost, you know, X billions of dollars to start up
to a new factory.
And of course, once you started to put the factory in, they would lower the price of the car. The consumer is such a winner on this thing across the board. You, as a consumer, you get free cars and free solar panels.
And it's not like the investors in the company can't see what China's doing.
Right.
In other words, they can hedge their bets. They can take measures to prolong things or put off for a certain period of time.
Well, of course,
they can just wait to open the factory for the entire time that they're subsidizing and dumping.
Exactly.
And then open at the end of that.
Right.
And so it stings them both ways. So,
well, not only that, the other thing that is kind of important here is that we're talking about the future here. They don't know what's going to happen in the future.
Right.
About the time they've all subsidized us with these El Cheapo, you know, with Lexuses.
Hover cars.
Yeah, hover cars. Exactly. I mean, everyone's got personal transportation. Or they're not going to want cars. Or they'll bitch because they'll be telecommuting. There's so many different things that happen in the future.
Right.
That you can't see. That's why you let the market, and even the people, the idiots that want to subsidize this stuff, will take their stuff for a time. And all the money that we would be investing in General Motors and Ford and Chrysler and so forth would go to things that we do best, like iPods and, you know, whatever else we do, you know, the stuff that we do that we sell to them. I mean, it's just that simple.
Did you hit a...
Go ahead.
Your mic just took a...
My mic did?
Yeah.
No, mine's coming through here fine.
There you are. You're back on that.
Okay, well, I could hear me.
Okay, you...
So the point is that the jobs program is a failure.
Yeah, I mean, it can't work to the extent that any decision is made based on the political will to generate a company, a new company, that wouldn't normally have arisen in the regular market.
Right.
It's destined to fail.
Right.
I mean, you simply can't force companies through.
I know, but it's so funny because we've seen this happen. The United States has a long history of what they call protective tariffs, which is the same kind of thing. And when I remember, we used to have an unbelievable shoe manufacturing industry in this country, and the Italians started coming through here with El Cheapo shoes, so they put this big old tariff on there so that our shoe companies wouldn't go out of business. Well, all it meant was that people didn't get as many shoes as they might otherwise want. I mean, because they protected a business that really had no business being in business anymore. The Italian shoes were better quality and lower price, and so our local shoe companies, I'm sorry, it's time for you to get out of the shoe business and get into the horse saddle business or something.
Yeah.
You know, that's what happens. It's creative destructionism, and it's the way
the
market
all
figures.
Well, this is like giving a promoter a bunch of money and saying, go out and pick the winning band. And they're giving the government guy the money.
Right.
And, okay, go out. Okay, you have to. And one of these bands is going to make it.
Right.
And you're going to be backed by the government. And so...
Of course, you've picked... By picking the winners, you've also picked the losers.
Right, right, right.
And, of course, and the market may not like it. As we said, you know, as somebody was talking about this the other day, when a business makes a mistake, like Coke did when they introduced New Coke, and the hoorah was all there, and people were. It. You know how long? I just found this out. Do you know how long it took Coke to rectify that problem?
It was about
17 weeks.
That's it?
17 weeks. They realized they had made a colossal mistake,
right.
And they went back to the classic Coke.
Right, right.
17, 4 months, boom, yeah. End of story. And that's what they do.
They adapted.
Yeah.
And it was a financial decision, is the whole point.
Absolutely it was a financial.
Right. Now think about this. If people had lobbied for the new Coke because it was popular or something? Or because
people liked it.
Right, right.
And so the government maybe would subsidize the new Coke.
Right.
And... You know, with what? With my ginger ale money.
Right.
I mean, I'm sorry. Go away. So anyway, we've killed that. Well, that actually goes on to now the thing was that was announced today, of course, was the spending cuts.
Well, is the jobs bill going to be signed into law? I heard it still had some hoops to go through.
No,
oh, yeah.
Does it have hoops?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, he wanted them to sign it today. And, of course, at that point, it actually, I think it goes... in tandem with this spending cuts bill. I think they kind of have, they're sort of tied together. But
what's funny is it's not even going to make it to a vote in the Senate for another month because there's Democrats that oppose it.
Yeah.
At this point. I mean, there are some cuts in it to some of the programs. One of the ways he's trying to sell it is by saying...
Wait a minute. We're switching over to the cuts program. The cuts. Rather.
No, I mean, actually, the jobs program has some kind of...
What are the cuts? Jobs, I thought it was 100% creating jobs. You know, infrastructure, teachers, you know, we're going to... You know, Helicopter Ben is going to show up there with whatever it is and shower these favored job people with jobs. You know, and again...
There's something that the Democrats don't like. Bad.
Okay, well...
I mean,
it probably has something to do with the unions, but I don't know what it would be. But anyway, okay, let's move on to what happened today. Of course, this is Monday. And this was the spending cuts bill, which is what, $3 trillion?
Yeah.
Supposedly over 10 years.
Is that what it is?
That's what they're going to use to pay for the jobs bill.
Uh-huh.
And the problem is that technically the jobs money of half a trillion is supposed to be spent like next week. And then you're supposed to have the cuts over the next 10 years, which are all backloaded, by the way. Those cuts don't even start until, you know, 3 or 4 years. And a little minor problem is, guess what? In 3 or 4 years, it'll be a different Congress. I mean, you can't bind the next Congress.
You just tell them what to do.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, it doesn't work that way. They can
leave
decide.
Leave a sticky note.
And you're right. That's right. Leave them a sticky note and say, don't forget, cut. So anyway, it turns out that it doesn't add up is what I'm saying. It doesn't add up. And it's never going to happen. I mean, they've already cut the line in the sand. Boehner has already said that, you know, no taxes on the revenue plan. Right.
Now, the interesting thing, just let me ask you this, Jimmy. I mean, we had an email this week that was questioning, look, if high taxes are such a bad thing, then how come Sweden and Norway and... I mean,
I thought that Engineer Eric answered it very well, and that is, first of all, you wait and see, number one. You know, I lived there for a year,
uh-huh.
So I can tell you that, and I lived with a family, and they had, like you say, this was a Swedish socialism. A couple things you got to realize. First of all, the country is the size of Florida with, you know, 80 or 90% of the population concentrated below like Orlando, as it is here, and they all speak Swedish. And they all, although there were several dialects, interestingly enough, very homogeneous. And there's only 7 million of them. Here, of course, we are the original stew pot of mixtures of everybody from every place. Wait a minute, let me finish. And so he comes along and somebody said, well, now they have a large immigrant population. They may. That's going to kill them. That's going to kill the Swedish socialist system. It was okay for a small homogeneous population. If you're Amish or something like that, you know, if you're one of those societies up in northern New York, and you can get away with it. But you can't get away with it, something like that in the United States with the size of this country, number one, and the variety of people that we've got. I mean, think about
how do their businesses compete though with 60%?
They don't have that many. Remember now, the only businesses that really compete
tourism.
Tourism is one, but they have Volvo, which, of course, Volvo was bought by Ford, I think, at one point, and Saab, which I think is now owned by somebody else.
And they have ABBA.
ABBA, right, exactly. But basically, their exports are Not that much. You know, they
IKEA.
That's Finland. That's okay. Finnish. No, IKEA is Swedish. I think you're right. And I think it is right. But again, it's not to say you can't do it. But it's not. They don't have the tremendous variability in the stuff that we do. For instance, I mean, you know, the product mix that we put together is stunning.
Oh, I can tell you that our buddy Jeff over in Norway. I mean, you know, they don't have like Cheetos over there or Fritos.
Oh yeah, that was another thing. Know. And of course, a lot of people would say that's good. Yeah. But it was interesting because I did go into what they call a supermarket. Uh-huh. I'll never forget when I went over there. And, you know, in the cereal aisle, it was the cereal cubicle.
Right.
You know, here in Publix, you know, it's an entire aisle.
Right.
And the cereal cubicle had like, they had like, you know, six different brands.
Right.
Here there's like 200. I mean, it's unbelievable. And he said, well, we just don't have the population to support it. Right. You know, we have not much in the way of selection. And that's what we live with because there are only 7 million people.
Right.
So anyway,
if you had the government guy decide like the number and type and variety of soda in the 7-Eleven,
yeah,
you wouldn't have 27 coolers of
right
sodas.
Yeah,
I mean,
you just don't. You have to have a certain size population to do a lot of that stuff. And again, the
MREs for everybody.
Yeah, right. And again, when you go into a true socialist or totalitarian type country, like in Russia, they had like one or two different kinds of cars. That was it.
And all we've got 20 and 40 grit toilet paper.
Yeah, that's right. And then, but I mean, it was interesting because they had this car, I think, called the Trabat, which was like a 2 or 3 or 4 year waiting period. But all the execs all drove Mercedes, which
right.
they bought from Germany.
And
so anyway, the point is that particular example, even if it's right, it doesn't apply to us. Sorry, doesn't apply. We're too different from diversified and too different from them. So the other thing is, I want to get back to this tax plan just for a second because there's a couple of different things here. I love the way they talk about this. We are going to ask the millionaires and billionaires to contribute more.
Their fair share.
Their fair share. We're going to ask them to contribute their fair share. And you know what? I always look at it. I think we talked about this before. I look at a contribution. It's like what we do here on the... for the drinks on game day, you know, if
right.
you can contribute 50 cents or not, you know, or whatever. But boy, try and not make your contribution to the tax people and you're going to end up in jail or worse. Mm-hmm. So that they always use that ask to contribute. I think it's just such a great little term. And it's just, yeah, right. Exactly.
We're asking nicely.
Yeah. So anyway, I think it was really, really funny. Of course, now what they've done is, as we've always said this before, anytime you have a law that's named after somebody, it's probably a bad law. Mm-hmm. So there, of course, this increase in taxes, they're calling it the Buffett rule.
Oh God, I know Buffett. He must be hating that.
Well,
he bought it, man.
Yeah, no, he did. But I mean,
it.
You know, here's a guy who's worth $50 billion
right.
and said, hell, I could pay a little more.
Yeah.
Well, I guess you could.
Yeah.
You know, but then how about the guy who's, you know, making $1 million, which is a cut. He's making $1 million. He and his wife are making $1 million. They got a business, you know, like Steve Martin had that shoe business, you know, in the wedding thing, you know, the father of the bride.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the kind of business that probably generate. You know, they're going to sock it to him. I mean, you know, they're going to nail him.
Kids can't go to Harvard now.
Yeah, well, that's it. Or probably we don't want to. So, anymore. Not at those prices.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that is, it's interesting when you, that, and of course.
Oh, we posted that video, too, called Eat the Rich. You could take all their money. It's not going it, to.
Yeah, right.
You wouldn't get it.
You wouldn't get it, right.
Nothing would happen.
Yeah. And the other thing, so amazing about this is they forget to mention something. They say that the millionaires and billionaires, that so much of their money comes from capital gains, which is only taxed at 15%, whereas his secretary, you know, probably makes $100,000 or whatever she makes, and you know, she's taxed at 26 or 30% or whatever it is. What they don't tell you is, okay, Buffett is makes his money on capital gains. Where did the capital come from?
Yeah.
Somebody had to earn that capital and pay taxes on it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's already been taxes paid on that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, when you figure out that money could very easily have been taxed at 25 or 30%, You know, and then it's being taxed again because of this capital gain. I mean,
one more time.
He could be paying 50% essentially when it's all done.
All said and done.
50%.
Well, if you look at the contribution of the top percentages of the population in terms of income, even though the top percentages control a lot more of the wealth, they contribute an even greater share of the tax revenue.
Of the tax revenue. Yeah,
so
I know. This is a
misnomer to say that they
ask
people to pay their fair share.
This is a classic case of liars figure and figures lie. You know, there's lies, damn lies, and statistics.
He just got a great quote from Buffett, and they're all parroting it.
I know.
Every one of them has said, well, we can't have, it's unconscionable to have millionaires paying a lower rate than their secretaries. And it's like, wait a minute. No, they're paying a higher rate. They're just getting out of, you know, they're using some loopholes, maybe. But
here's the deal: you have to
understand.
They're
still paying more.
Well, somebody, for instance, brought up the idea of coupon clippers, and I know a little bit about this. This is municipal bonds. What surprises me is that the cities and counties aren't up there screaming their heads off because since municipal bonds are tax free, supposedly, they are.
I'm trying to figure out where you're going with
this. Okay, where I'm going with this is. You are willing to buy, where you could maybe buy a Chrysler bond for 6%, you are willing to purchase a municipal bond for 3% because you don't have to pay taxes on it. And you don't have to monkey with the tax part of it. There are people that just say taxes are too much trouble, and they used to be 100% tax-free until 1970. And in fact, you didn't have to declare them because they were coupon. You know, it was a coupon. You walk into the bank and get your money. The object was to allow the cities and the counties to borrow money at below market rates. And large investors would buy muni bonds at these lower rates simply to avoid the monkeying with the tax man. Whereas if that was not available to them and they wanted to invest their money in a bond, they could go out and buy an IBM bond or corporate bond at a higher rate and then declare the income, go through all the machinations, and it would probably come out to be about the same. That was the whole idea. It comes, and in fact, muni bonds usually are priced when they figure out what they have to sell them for. They go and they look at the typical tax rate of the average of the high income investor, and they say, okay, if he were to purchase today a corporate bond, this is what his tax liability would be. Back that out down to the municipal bond rate, and he'll buy that, and it's a wash, and that's fine because there's no paperwork involved. So I can't imagine why the cities and counties are out there screaming their heads off, because if you now make municipal bonds, for instance, not tax-free, and of course, for really high-income people, they're not anymore. They are taxed slightly because of this alternate minimum tax. But
and nobody's going to buy it.
Well, what happens is their rates are going to go up to market rates, which means that instead of being able to borrow money at 3% or 2%, they're going to be paying 5% and 6%, which the taxpayers are going to scream bloody murder on something like that. I mean, I can't imagine why the city and county people aren't up there screaming their heads off saying, wait a minute, you're killing us because we want to issue a $20 million revenue bond, and now it's going to cost us, 5 or 6% instead of 2 or 3%. And that's a big deal. So, I haven't seen anything about that. So I'm not sure why.
Speaking of tax stamps and such, you wanted to bring up Carlo Ponzi.
Oh, you're right. That was my next thing on the GOP, debate. What's his name? Perry comes out and he said the Social Security is a Ponzi scheme. Now, we've said this for years.
Right.
We've talked about this. I can't tell you how many times. I listened to Stefan Molyneux the other day on his take on it, and he actually is better at it than I am. A Ponzi scheme would be a dramatic step up from what Social Security is. Why? Because the Ponzi scheme is based on people's greed, but you don't have to buy into it. You didn't have to buy Bernie Madoff stuff. You didn't have to buy Ponzi stuff. You could have gone anyplace else. If the returns look too good to be true, they probably are, and I'll put my money over here in a more reliable. But you could, even if you got in, a lot of people got out. I mean, right. A lot of people. Then the Madoff
and
was.
We should clarify, and we'll put a link to this because Jack's not here. But this is just a Wikipedia. You can Wikipedia Charles Ponzi or Carlo Ponzi.
Yeah.
And it'll tell you the history, and it's clear everybody knows it. And what it was is he basically had this. He started off with a scheme to recoup some monies using
stamps.
Stamps. That yeah. What he would do is he sent a bunch of money to his relatives in Italy to buy a bunch of stamp coupons, and they sent them over to him in America. He exchanged them for the American stamps and then sold those at a profit.
And yeah, and actually when he started off, it was perfectly legal.
Right.
But he got greedy.
Well, what happened was he got a whole bunch of investors.
Right.
And then he realized that there weren't even nearly that many stamps in circulation. He couldn't even, his business, it didn't even involve that much stuff.
Yeah.
And so, but then an interesting thing happened, I think, of course. All this money was being handed to him, and he realized he could pay back the earlier investors
with the
new investment
right.
money.
So,
and so then the early investors were phenomenally happy,
right?
Because they got their money back like right away,
yeah.
big cash, and then they went out and got more money for him.
Right.
And so all of a sudden there was this runaway cycle where everybody started giving this guy cash, and he was paying back some of the old investors, making big grandstand statements. He opened up a big business on the street of the day in the area, and all these investors, and then somebody finally did the numbers, and they were like, wait a minute.
Well, what happened was, of course, what happened was the way a Ponzi scheme works, of course, it's like a pyramid. I mean, the fact is that at some point...
It only works if there's new investors.
Right, and once you run out of new investors,
right.
the whole thing collapses. Well,
right.
You know, the whole thing from start to finish was like a year.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like no time at all.
Right.
Social Security's been going for 70 years. And
well,
in fact, the early investors, if you want to call it, the early retirees,
uh-huh.
they raked in the dough. I mean,
you mean Grandma Jimmy, Grandma Doan?
Grandma was one. Grandma
still is.
Still is. Yeah, I mean, she, you know, she paid. She
Social
and her
Security's
husband,
worst nightmare.
You know, absolutely.
A picture of her on the wall.
No, that's
Halloween.
Right. You know, they would like us
big
to
red
they would like they would like for us to take her out. She's going to be 100.
Uh-huh.
In 10 months or 11 months. And she's been collecting Social Security for like 35 or 40 years.
Yeah.
I mean, and her husband did not pay into it, but for maybe 25 or 30 years.
Right.
And so, I mean, what she's gotten out of this, let me put it this way. Her annual take is probably more than they all put in for the whole time. I mean, no, she's killing them.
Right. When you factor in cost of living. And
oh, no, she's killing them. So anyway, I mean, back then it was like, your contribution when her husband was alive, his contribution was like 1.5% and the employer was 1.5%. Now it's 7.5 and 7.5.
Right. Our money, the money that I'm putting in is just gone.
It's gone. No, it's gone.
Poof.
And, of course, as you know, there was, you know, somebody sued at one point.
Yeah, where's my money?
Where's my money? And the Supreme Court said, no, it's a tax.
Right.
And you have no, the Congress can change it anytime they want. And,
yeah.
of course, they do. So, anyway, that's the difference between Social Security and Ponzi is that
It's forced.
It's coerced. That's right.
It's a Ponzi scheme with guns.
Well, not only that, it was originally as founded
with the federal family.
It was also, I think I've mentioned this before, it was also something that we love called a tontine.
A tontine
is something where the last man alive gets the bottle of whiskey.
It's a cross between an annuity and a lottery.
Right.
It's like
exactly.
You enter in all of your money. And the money always stays there. The principal stays there.
Right.
And you get paid an annuity, which grows each time somebody kicks off.
Right.
So, but the principal never comes out until the last person.
Right. That's right.
And of course, that
person gets the principal that was put in by everybody.
Right.
So, in other words, if you have 100 people each putting in $1,000,
right.
when the last person gets $100,000.
Right.
And so the point is that...
We encourage you to give to the Jimmy Doan Tontine.
That's
well,
right.
the thing is that the Tontines...
The point is... That Social Security, when it was first enacted, the life expectancy was 62 or 63. You were not expected, on average, to collect any. You were supposed to die. It was founded on the fact, because if you, I mean, seriously, you were supposed to DIE because on average. Now,
right.
What killed him, of course, was his life expectancy went up by 20 years. And, you know, now they're getting killed on that. And they obviously...
Well, and they spent the cash.
And they spent it as soon as it came in, right. And that was it. And what did they spend it on? You know, the problem is governments really can't save. Local ones can. But the federal government has no way to save money. They conceivably could put it in a vault somewhere, but they don't. But, I mean, it's not like they can go out and invest in IBM or anything, because then they'd be monkeying with that market. They just don't
right.
do it. So they have to... The only investment that they can make is infrastructure, and they haven't done a real good job on that if you go out here and drive around on our roads. I mean, they're not keeping that up. And, of course, a lot of the, quote, investments they do are stuff that they just blow up.
Yeah.
You know,
we invested in these bombs.
Yeah, that's right. No, here's a Predator. Kaboom. Right, boom. You know, the whole deal. I mean, no problem. You know, look at all the mothballed battleships and all the planes that they shoved off the deck.
I guess the expectation was it would be entered into some giant municipal fund.
They couldn't do it. No, what they did is they bought government bonds with the money got spent. And so that money has to be paid back by you guys, you know, and your children. And that's the other thing that Stefan...
Mutual fund, that's...
They can't do it. They can't do it. That's the whole point. They can't do that. Because they would be... The mutual fund would have to encompass, again, winners and losers, because...
It'd be like a Dow Jones, you know, levels, you know...
Well, conceivable, but then that leaves out the NASDAQ, that leaves out the American, S&P. You know, and it leaves out all the other people. I mean, you know, you're still picking winners and losers. And the Dow Jones only 30 stocks, so... You know, S&P 500, you know, I mean, you just couldn't, you would
well,
not.
How much money are they talking about?
Untold billions. I mean, you really affect the market when you put that kind of money in the stock market.
Well, I mean,
and again, you are choosing winners, which you can't, you're choosing to back businesses that currently exist against the ones that aren't here yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's just government.
We know.
Yeah, that's right. The federal government is physically unable to invest its money, except supposedly in a long-term capital item like an infrastructure, conceivably. Although that can be done privately, we have toll roads. You know, it's no big deal. We have toll bridges.
Your infrastructure bank, Jimmy.
Yeah, right. Well, good luck. So anyway,
what? That's on the.
Yeah, I know. Except the money's not there. The money is being promised to be there by you, the taxpayer. So the other thing that is different about that Stefan brought up about that I really like. At least with a Ponzi scheme, you are not obligating your children and grandchildren. Whereas when it collapses, you lose the money. End of story. You know, your kids don't get an inheritance, but they didn't have any money in there, and they don't owe any money. So that's how bad, as he said, if it were only as good as a Ponzi scheme, it would be an unbelievably giant step up where it currently is. So I thought that was good. Anyway, it is interesting to see how they pillory.
And Mitt the Twit's already backed off of he's already saying, it's not a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah, right.
I mean, very bad.
No,
he's been out for 60 years.
I watched today. I watched Geithner today. I watched, you know, he's back from Europe. We're going to talk about that in a minute. And I watched the head of the World Bank, and I watched some other people. They're all clueless on this stuff. They have no idea what's going on. It's just it's hysterical. The other thing that on the GOP debate that really got a lot of airplay that was bad news, I guess, for Ron Paul was the let him die comment. And that was when Wolf Blitzen asked.
Blitzenkrieg?
Yes, Blitzenkrieg asked him. He says, well, what about, and he gives this really hypothetical example. Right. Here's a one in a million.
Child born with brain cancer, well, no money, no, poor.
What, it was a gentleman who went in. Right. Doctor said
illegal alien.
Yeah, no.
It was.
Whatever. Okay, I don't care. Doesn't matter.
Not covered is the bottom line.
Not covered, right. Walked in, you got 6 months to live without this very expensive procedure, and, you know, are you just going to let him die?
Right.
And of course,
such a freaking...
Well, the answer is,
gotcha,
why are there only two options? Either you tax the bejesus out of everybody.
Well, and Ron didn't settle for that. He picked the third option.
Well, I know, but he didn't say it very well.
Well, he didn't say it maybe forcefully enough, but
that
everybody
was
heard
thing.
It.
No, I mean, I would have asked the question back and say, are you telling me there are only two options? Either society picks up the tab or he dies.
Right.
No
right.
other options available. Are and you telling me nothing else is on the table?
He pointed out that prior to all of these mandates, those people were cared for.
Right, and they were.
By the charities.
Right.
By the churches and by the doctors.
And by the doctors, right.
The fact is that the doctors are human.
And let me tell you, you walk in
and
there,
half of them are liberal.
That's right.
So what I mean, what do you think?
They would, if without all the mandates, believe me, we would. But here's the other thing: is people die. We're all dying. I got a newsflash. The day you're born, on the way to die.
Yeah, but we're
no, but I'm just saying that I thought he. I don't think he handled. I would have asked, you know,
well, that's what's
his name right back. I would have said, why are there only two options?
That's what the audience member's point was. People die.
He says, you know, that the pundits all jumped on this, about the horrible
heartless
audience. You know, and of course, here's the other thing: if everybody in America that's a voter or a taxpayer would let this guy die, then what right do those guys, the 535 people in Washington, have to say no? We're going to take your money and save this guy.
Well, that's the thing, in my opinion, that the you'd think that the right would be outraged because that the government has usurped the charity purpose of the church.
Oh, yeah. Well, they have a big hoorah here locally. Our local government is required by statute or something to donate 1% of the taxes to charity. And, of course, some people are walking, tea parties, especially down here locally, are walking down and saying, what are you doing in the charity business? I mean, this is out and out charity.
Right.
Charity. You know, I remember, for instance, when I was going out and rounding up money for Rotary, you know, somebody told me to, you know, go over to the Kiwanis and see if they want to help. I said, well, they got their own stuff. You know,
I
go to business is what I do.
You
know, I'm not in the business of giving any money to Kiwanis. They got their own thing, and they're not in the business of giving money to me.
Right. And here's the thing, Jimmy. It's not charity because you can't hold somebody up and give the money away to a good cause and call it charity.
Yeah, no matter how good the cause is.
No matter how good the cause
is. It can be just, yeah, it can be the best cause on the planet.
And let's face it, there is no vetting of the people to whom these charitable contributions are then given in the government, from the government perspective. You can be a crack whatever and go get your check.
Your food stamps. That's right.
Your subsidized housing.
That's right.
You know,
you
whatever
can get all
it is.
Yep. You can get your
to go to the church when you're
Well, it's funny because here locally, they do have a slight sort of a vetting procedure. when they give out $1 million or whatever they give here, $1.5 million locally to charities, they have the charities that all come up. There was like 30 of them, I think, this year. And I think that they gave money to half of them. But they have a vetting, an ersatz vetting procedure. It's like a 30-page thing that you fill out. And how good are you doing it for the community? Well, this is teaching to the test. I mean, what are you going to fill out? We're wasted people and we're no good here. You know, no. Every one of them they were good not only for Gainesville, but for the entire universe. This would make the people on Neptune happy. Such a good, and so obviously you're going to fill out the paper, but at least they have that much of a vetting procedure. But like you say, with food stamps and stuff like, if you stagger through the door, you get the stuff. So,
yeah.
So, no, that is unbelievable. So, okay. The point I was making about that, a hypothetical was a straw man. You know, it was one of those.
It's a Hobson's choice.
Right.
You know, I mean, you're not taking those.
Do you still beat your mother?
Right. Exactly.
So, and they didn't call.
Paul answered it well.
I think he could have answered it better personally.
Even John Stewart pointed out that Paul said no. He said the doctors take care of these people.
Yeah,
they do not die.
Yeah. Well, here's the other question. What happened if the doctor gave him the diagnosis, said you've got this rare form of cancer and you've got 6 months to live? It will cost $1 trillion and you can live. Well, I'm sorry. You know, there's always a barrier somewhere. You don't even say, well, society's got to take care of it. No, you don't. I mean, at some point, and of course,
price control.
And that's exactly what's going
to
happen.
You have to be flown to the moon.
That's right.
And live
in a bubble.
Right. And then you'll be all right. Yeah. But you do have to have an internet connection.
That's right.
Like on
big screen TV.
High speed. Yeah. Big screen. So anyway, okay. Next time moving on, we talked a little bit about Tim Geithner before, but I thought it was interesting. He got back over the weekend from his trip to Europe.
Oh, how nice.
Where he talked to Europe and said, complete default on your part or whatever is unacceptable. You know, I really have to go in there and bail everybody out. And, you know, that's unbelievable. You know, to think that you would, you know, and of course a lot of people, not the big leaders, the big leaders, Sarkozy and what's her face were Merkel, whatever, a little more diplomatic, but other people were saying,
well, they wanted him to come over there so that they could go back to their people and go,
there were a bunch of other people saying, what's this guy doing here? I mean, you have any problems at home? I mean, what?
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm sorry. You're lecturing me? Right. And
that was the thing. I mean, beautiful. I think it's great. Ditch your euros now.
Well, yeah. And the euros, let me tell you something. There are more than we talked about in the last show about Finland wanting some collateral from Germany on if they're going to loan any more money to Greece. And, of course, the other thing is that Greece now has put on some austerity measures, which are not enough, and there's riots in the streets. So the question is Greece going to default? Now, that is a rhetorical question. They are going to default. The question is when. And I'm thinking sooner rather than later. I'm betting there apparently there is a one of these what do you call it? Drop Dead Days is around the middle of October of all times. I mean, we're talking a month away.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they've already had a couple, and they're
I know, but this is now they have another one, and of course the what's happened is, of course, especially in Greece, what they call, quote, the public sector, i.e. the government, i.e. the parasite class, is just way too big. It's eating up the host. So they call these austerity measures, and they're saying, well, we're going to cut back. They've cut back like 50% on the police. And, of course, that's what they always do, is they close the monuments and, cut back on the police, say, okay, you're all going to die. And, by the way, we're going to retire the fire engine. Never mind all the bureaucrats, you know, and everybody else has got something else, you know, the Department of Education or whatever the hell it is. All those people still stay there. But anyway, apparently the numbers are that they're not even close to having enough. They bought them. Apparently they are buying themselves a little bit of time, like a day at a time, practically. You know, it's like a payday loan for these guys. And so at some point, even the payday loan people are going to say, you know, no.
Yeah, they're going. It's about a week or 10 days. I've seen a couple of them.
Okay. I'm. And the problem is then they're talking about, well, is there going to be a contagion? Well, the other thing is people don't realize the third largest economy in Europe is Italy,
which just got downgraded today.
Loan outstanding is 120% of GDP. I mean, they can't support what they got, and so they're going to start through through this whole thing too.
And the French are heavily invested in them.
Right. So once the banks start to realize that they're all the bond paper that they have in the back room is not even worth wallpaper, their capitalization drops through the thing, and they're leveraged even that high. And then what you're going to see, and you've already seen this, I saw a thing the other day that the amount of money that has been cashed out literally by people walking in the bank and saying, I want my money, was something like €75 billion last month. People are literally thinking, I'm getting my money out of
the
bank.
That's a fair amount of cash.
Yeah, well, it's one of the highest ever. It rivals.
How much does their FDIC have in its stores over there?
Well,
they can't have more than a few trillion, right? I mean,
no, they don't have anything like that. They have a different way of doing things because of the way the euros it was set up. You know, you talk about a camel as a horse designed by a committee. The euro is such a mishmash because every country still has their central bank. Here, at least, we have one central bank that does all the damage. They've got 17 of them. And that's why the Greece...
So they all issue independent bonds and stuff?
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, exactly. And that they were trying to change that, and they...
That's what you're talking about. The spread on the German bond was so much bigger than the spread between the German bond and the Italian bond.
Oh, the currently two-year money in Greece is 46%.
Wow.
Yeah, and you're not going to get it. I mean, only a fool would even invest at that rate, because you're not going to get it. So anyway,
so is gold going up?
Gold actually has tanked here recently, but it's still a buying opportunity. I didn't sell any.
You're giving Greece to like what, the new year or something?
Yeah, new year.
We got to get a predictions thing up.
Well, I've got some coming.
Well, no, I mean like
wall. Oh, right. Yeah, on the wall. Right. So of all the people, and I was watching Tim Geithner on TV tonight. He was interviewed on a couple different places on NPR, and of course it's just the same old, what did I say, you know, this failure is not an option. Well, it is. I got newsflash for you, it is. And so, at any rate, so I'm moving on by item six here.
Hire Gene Kranz.
I saw a note that said the poverty rate is at an all-time high. It's now 15% of the people, something like that, live below the poverty line, which is something like $13,000 or $14,000 a year.
Yeah, but that doesn't include subsidized food, subsidized housing.
No, I know, but what I'm saying is that the idea is somehow that I don't know if you know this, but Lyndon Johnson declared the war on poverty in 1966 or 67.
Oh, so it's over.
So it's over, right. We've been fighting this, for 40 years. And, gosh, I don't understand how that could be. I mean, how if you've been fighting, why didn't you win it, in the first year or two, So obviously, we've talked about this before. Anytime the government declares war on anything, it all goes down the toilet. I mean, there's no winning. There's the opposite. It's 180.
Right.
So I just thought it was interesting that they always break out. They say 46 million people are on food stamps, which of course means they can go in and get their steak for nothing, and 15% are below the poverty line. And then they usually say, but they give the numbers and they'll say something like, well, there's now 43 million people, 43 million people are considered to be below the poverty line, and 47 million children. And I'm going like, wait a minute. You know, don't the children like out on the streets, like they are in Brazil or something, you know, out on the streets living under. No, I mean, they live with people. I mean, aren't they counted in the. I don't quite understand how. Why it matters, you know, if the family's
all
the, poor.
All those numbers, to me, all those numbers, those are just political definitions of whatever. Look, the bottom line, we know this: the economy sucks, and it's getting worse.
Yep. and Obama's going to be a one-termer for this reason, because people are, no matter what happens, I think he'd even have a hard time if he declared a war at this point. I think people even might see through that.
What? You mean another one?
Yeah, another war. Yeah, Syria. You know, bomb Syria.
Iran. Yes.
You know, and the it was interesting because. Cheney, that, you know, warmonger from hell, came out with his book, and they asked him, he says, well, he really advised his president to bomb the nuclear reactor or something, like, you know, we were going to go in there and do it unilaterally, but the Israelis did it. And I'm going like, Jesus, you know, who are you, for God's sakes, Mr. Pacemaker? So anyway, the other thing is that I noticed, talking about pundits, James Carville, you know, old... he was on the other day, and he said, and saying to people was that Obama should panic.
Right.
Fire people right and left, change the degree, you know, the whole deal. Of course, he just got some new people.
Well, that's what George Will said. Look, who's he got left to fire? I mean, you got Valerie Jarrett's gone. You've got...
he went through a litany of people.
Yeah, everybody. I mean, they're all gone. Christina Romer, she's gone. Goolsbee, he's gone. I mean...
So what he does is... Well, anyway, that's what he says was fire. And, of course, it reminded me of a... first of all, I forget... I should have it here someplace, but the last...
Maybe that's why he needs his jobs, Bill, so he can get some new people to work for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I did... He did talk about that the guy was not doing a good job of running the country. And I thought, you know... You're not supposed to run the country.
Well, he's a Democrat.
I know, but I mean, running the country, that's not your business. That's my business.
They think it is.
I know, but it's really amazing that he would just go in there and say, you know, we really need to do a better job of running the country. No, you need to get out of the way. We can run it just fine without you. And in fact, you're like the square wheels on my car. I mean, I know what I'm doing here, for God's sake. So, but
oh,
I did,
Jimmy, and your daughter needs an HPV vaccination.
Yeah, right. Well, okay. And so I was reminded of this quote when Carville says Obama should panic, and that is this, and I forget where the quote is. The last thing you want is panicky people operating the far-reaching power levels of the state.
Right.
I mean, you know, they're in panic mode, and now they're going to pull out all the stops. I'm going like, wait a minute. Well, yeah, it is not the time.
What I'm reminded of is the greatest political irony of all time, which is FDR and his fear quote.
We have only nothing to fear but fear itself?
Right.
And?
We have nothing to fear but fear itself. And of course, when you hear that, you think, oh, well, there's nothing to fear. Because if there's only fear to fear, then you have nothing to fear. You can just right. ignore that, right?
Right.
That's what everybody thinks it is.
Right.
But that's not it at all. He said that as the justification for him withdrawing and calling in all the gold.
Right.
Because he was afraid of the fear which would cause a run on the banks.
Right.
In other words, he said there's nothing to fear except for fear, so we got to fear that. So everybody bring all your gold in because I'm afraid of the fear.
Yeah.
And all this time he gets credit for saying that he's not afraid, and yet
he was panicked.
He was panicked and devalued the dollar because of it.
Yeah. Oh yeah, 40% or something like that.
I mean, I'm saying
you talk about a ripoff. Can you imagine? He bought all that gold at $20 an ounce or 22, whatever it was an ounce.
20 sold it back to 35.
35. Yeah. I mean, isn't that sweet deal? You know,
which
is nice.
Well, my suggestion at this point, I'm turning a little bit. I'm going to suggest that this Christmas, instead of bullion, that you buy gold jewelry. Simple. Gold 18-karat jewelry because, you know, nothing elaborate, but something that can be worn and traded, but won't be confiscated if they decide to call in all the gold again.
You know, like anybody's going to give it to them.
Well, I'm just saying, if you know.
Yeah, no, I appreciate what you're saying. And the one thing you do want to do, and you might be able to do it at pawn shop, you can probably get some of that jewelry, not a huge premium over the actual
right.
melt
that's
value.
What I'm that's what,
yeah, that's what you want to do. You don't want to get the Cartier gold.
No,
you want to get the just the gold rope. Yeah.
Well, all right, there you have it. Part one of our September 11th, 2011 Jimmy Doan Show. This outro goes out to Josh in L.A. since he wrote it, sang it, and played guitar on it. It's a track called Here Today, Gone Tomorrow, which is what this administration is doing to our savings these days. From our old 80s band, Silent Image.